And thank you very much for joining Mental Health and Wellness in Times of Change. Before I get started, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners on the land on which we meet. We're obviously meeting around Australia right now. I'm on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and I wanted to pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. And we wanted to pay my respects to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people here with us today. The reason we're here today is really that these are extraordinary times. Firstly, from ABCN, and I think on behalf of our companies, I'd like to thank all the educators in the room for the work that you've done to support and connect and educate students in these times. At ABCN, we've heard stories of absolute wonderful ingenuity and commitment to the students, stories that I will absolutely never forget. And at the same time, you know, we're really conscious that COVID-19 has affected the mental health of the entire community, particularly the students and their families. But undoubtedly, the educators and the school leaders, you who've been supporting these students and communities, as well as dealing with enormous change. You know, in asking our schools how we could support them at this time, a topic they came up and said, look, we'd really like to hear from how do our companies think about the health and well-being of their staff? And, you know, could we translate that into how we support our school team, our school educators, and the staff in our schools? So this is really the purpose of this seminar. This is the first time we've done such a session, so we'll be definitely asking you for feedback after this, and we may run other sessions like this on other topics if you find it useful. In terms of the structure, what I'm going to do is introduce our panelists, then get them to tell a bit about themselves, and then I'm going to hand over to Beth Godwin to lead the discussion. We're going to have about half an hour roughly for the sort of more panel discussion that Beth's going to lead, and then going to have a significant time really open for audience questions. You can put the audience questions in the chat function, but you can also, if you want to have make a private question that you don't want to see the entire audience to see, you can also text using the number 0413 419 330. And Cara, if you wouldn't mind putting that in the chat, that would be helpful. If you do want to ask a question that will be asked publicly, but you don't want to be attributed to yourself. We're going to wrap up promptly at 4:30, and I'm then going to send you a follow-up email with the survey and some materials that our presenters have provided. We want this to be super, super interactive, so please feel free to ask questions yourself, put your hand up and in the sort of functionality, and or submit those questions in text. And this session is going to be recorded, so please accept that it's going to be recorded, and also that if you do want a copy of this recording, you are able to ask the ABCN team. So let me get started and introduce you to our panelists. We have Glenn Baird, Head of Mental Health from TAL, Petrina Felix Tolhurst, Executive Manager, Business Enablement and IAG, and Beth Godwin, Principal Cabramatta High School. So Glenn leads TAL's mental health strategy, working with both internal and external stakeholders and groups to manage the health and well-being of TAL's people, its customers, and all Australians. He's a qualified psychotherapist, facilitator, and trainer with over 14 years' experience, and used to working with people from diverse backgrounds, from professional athletes, corporate lawyers, and tradespeople. He has a passion for high-performance sports and has played at elite levels, so that he also has a perspective of how to help individuals and team focus on continual improvement. He's designed and implemented award-winning workplace education and support programs promoting health and well-being. Petrina Felix Tolhurst is the Executive Manager of Business Enablement at IAG. Petrina is IAG's Executive Manager, which includes their safe and well-being team, and she's been part of IAG's COVID response for their people. She's a leader within organisational development, a specialist in talent management, leadership and culture, change management and learning and development. She's got experience working across telecoms, banking, insurance and vocational education, and has led the successful implementation of talent, culture, leadership and capability solutions and across in the HR space. And finally, we have Beth Godwin, who I know many of you know. Beth is the principal of Cabramatta High School in Sydney and has been since 2004. Cabramatta has over 1,500 students, 96% from language backgrounds other than English. She currently sits on the ABCN board and has had a long partnership with CBA, including two-way mentoring relationships with Ralph Norris and Ian Narev, two former CBA CEOs. So I'd really like to just start moving with Glenn and Petrina, and then I'm going to hand over to Beth to ask the tougher questions. But starting with Glenn, you know, I know you're going to ask us all a question to reflect on. And then once you've asked that, I'd love you just to give us a couple of minutes overview on how you developed your passion in mental health and how you currently support mental health in your organisation. Glenn, if I could hand it over to you.
Great. Thanks, Allegra. I think a good starting point for me is just to encourage you all to, thank you all for coming along and being part of this session, and thanks for having me along. I think these are great ways to stop and hit the pause button. And I think any time we get a chance to do that and stop and reflect on how we're going within ourselves is really important. So I would encourage you all, before I go into talk about me, I would encourage you all to think about, on a scale of 1 to 10 right now, how would you score yourself? 10 being things are great, 1 things are not so great. What score would you give yourself out of 10? Now, you can probably just take a moment to think, you know, realistically, where are you at? You don't have to share this with anyone. Just keep it in your own head. And as you come up with that idea of what score you're at, that could be a 3, it could be a 7, it could be a 10. I'd like you then to think about, what about the people that know you best? What about the people you live with? What about your colleagues? What about your kids? What score would they give you? Just think about, is that the same as what you would give yourself, or is it slightly different? Maybe theirs is higher, maybe yours is higher. And try and unpack some of the reasons behind that. And then I want you to think about, and hopefully we can touch on some points today that might give you some thought-provoking ideas on what you could do, but just think about what you can be doing as we talk about the content today that might help give yourself a boost by half a point or a point. And also just take time to reflect on those people close to you in your life, personal life or work life. What would they be seeing differently if you did move up by a point? And I think that's always, just going through that process is always a really good exercise to do, just to stop and reflect of where we're at. So with that said, keep that in your mind, but I'll talk briefly about myself. Allegra asked about the passion for mental health. What hit me when I studied psychology, I accepted a basketball scholarship when I was 18, and I studied psychology in the US for 4 years as part of my basketball scholarship. And I came back to play professional basketball here in Australia. And the one thing I noticed being a professional athlete is you are so focused on your physical health. You need to be at elite performance week in, week out, day in, day out. And there is so much focus on that. And then in order to be performing at our best, we needed to obviously take care of our mental health as well. Now, I'm talking when I was playing professional, it was late 90s, early 2000s. Now, once I retired and moved into workplaces, what really struck me back in the early 2000s, and even to some extent in some industries still today, there is a lot of focus on the health and safety of people. And the health generally just tends to focus on physical health. And I knew, for me, at playing elite level basketball, performance was about more than just physical health. And I don't see why that should be any different for any profession. And that's kind of what sparked my, you know, having obviously the degree in psychology behind me, but then moving in and seeing that it was kind of, there was a big gap there. And that's kind of really driven me to be doing more and more around mental health and in workplaces. And then, so I was working in suicide prevention for a long time, for 14 years in the counselling room, doing a lot in workplaces. But then an opportunity came up at TAL, and so I jumped at that. To give myself a bit of a different experience. And so now my role is, as you mentioned in the from my bio, is looking at the mental health across all lenses in the business. So it's for our customers, it's for our staff, but it's at every stage of the process. So if someone is applying for a policy, what's our policy wording around mental health? What questions are we asking that are relevant to mental health in underwriting, claim time, what prevention strategies we can put in place to keep people well. And that's really where my focus is now, is a lot of prevention work at trying to keep people and our customers more specifically in a good space. So I hope that answers your question, Allegra.
It does. That's a great introduction. Thank you very much. Petrina, I'd love then to move to you, if you could just give us a quick sort of introduction of why you got passionate about mental health and your role today. You're on mute, I think. Oh no, we can't hear you for a moment there. Oh dear, can't hear you. Okay, Petrina, we might give you a moment then to try a different headset. I might then just move straight to Beth while you're sorting that out, and ask you to kick off really with the first question, because I think, you know, what we want this to be is as relevant as it possible is for schools. So Beth, if you could go from there, that would be great.
Yeah, no problem. It seems obvious, but it goes without saying that 2020, it's been a little bit challenging. Is that an understatement? School leaders, we've been at the forefront of a lot of information, and many times it's information overload and decision-making on the fly to try and keep our communities safe and educated. At times it's been very rapid, confusing, confronting, and information that changes by the hour. For students, we are getting more adept at identifying mental health issues and seeking support for them. Even though it's limited, we are a little bit better at that. But we're also responsible for adults in our workplace. And so my questions are around, how do we look after the adults in the workplace? Through the changes, through the, in inverted commas, crisis, and leading forward, because we know that it will maybe have long-lasting effects. So my first question, what have been the triggers for mental health for adults in 2020? What behaviours indicate that they're not coping, or they're coping really well? What can we do to recognise, seek help and build their resilience? So it's about a three-part question.
I'm going to jump in.
Go for it, Glenn.
Okay. Look, it's been a pretty significant year already when we consider the bushfires and the impact they had at the beginning of the year. And even though we might not have been directly impacted, many of us were, some of them might not have been directly impacted, we certainly knew people that were impacted. And that, you know, is stressful in itself. Then we had a global pandemic to the mix not long after that. And, you know, what impact is that having on Australians? To me, a huge one. I look at, and this is something we've been very, very much promoting within TAL, is that, yes, we have this global pandemic that is causing a lot of stress and anxiety for people. There has been so much unknown. It's starting to get a little bit better now. But there's been so much unknown that we've had to work through. And with unknown and uncertainty comes heightened anxiety. And with that, we're adding this heightened anxiety to people's lives that are already stressful. You know, if we think about, you know, the death of a loved one, potentially in social isolation when we can't see anybody, you can't go to the funerals. We add that to financial pressure, relationship breakdown, custody battles with kids, then, you know, mental health conditions that people have. We're adding just quite a significant stressor and the anxiety that brings onto that, that's quite significant. And that is going to impact people. So we do have to develop some coping strategies there. What indicates that people might not be coping? I think that really the best thing we can do here is look out for changes in behaviour. We can go into specific details of what the symptoms might look like, but really it's changes in behaviour, things that are out of the ordinary for the person. So when we think about, you know, if a person is is irritable, or they've got poor self-care, they're less productive, they've maybe gained a little bit of weight, might be using alcohol a bit more, might be a bit more disconnected. So it is trying to look out for those changes in behaviour that are out of the ordinary for the person. And then for me, once we start to see those behavioural changes, I think it's really about having an open conversation with people on what we're seeing. To me, it's a really simple formula. You state the reasons for asking, and then you ask. And it's that simple. So, for example, if I was a principal at, and again, I'm not professing to know the challenges of a principal here, but if I was a principal and I'm noticing in one of the staff, one of the teachers, that they maybe they're having a few more issues with the kids. Maybe they're not as responsive to emails. Maybe they're less punctual. Maybe a few more sick days. You know, the conversation would be, you know, state the reasons. Hey, Joe Blogs, I'm noticing X, Y, Z. That's a concern for me. Are you okay? And I think creating that context before we ask the are you okay question is really, it lands so much better than just the straight out, are you okay? Because it can easily be too easily dismissed. So I think if we can state the reasons of the concerning behaviour that's out of the ordinary for the person, that's when we're giving ourselves the best opportunity to get an open and honest answer. Did that answer your question there, Beth?
I think other people may have supplementary questions as we go into discussion later. Would that be right, Allegra?
Yeah, there may be. But Petrina, can you speak up now? Can you try that? Is that working?
Can anybody hear me?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. And apologies for the tech mishap, but I'm back in again via mobile as well as video. I believe, Beth, I heard most of your questions, so apologies if I don't answer it fully. And I may be repeating something that Glenn said as well, whilst I disconnected and reconnected. From a triggers and a driver's perspective, I'm sure that they're probably the same that we've seen in our corporate environment that you probably see from a school's environment. What we have noticed is that due to the multiple changes for people from and their ability to really be thrown into a whole lot of change at the one time, that their lack of control of being able to prepare for that change has seen some real triggers in people shifting in behaviour. We also very early on recognised that from a COVID perspective, as it relates to financial stress, we had a lot of people who started talking to us about family members, some within the same household who were stood down or no longer had employment, so that there were a lot of stressors from a financial perspective as well. The other key one that we noticed also, and again, I'm speaking mainly from a COVID perspective just to give a slightly different lens, is many of our employees had added carer accountabilities. So on top of a change of a work location and on top of a change of potentially being redeployed into a totally different role, we then had people who, whilst you know, schools were closed and or their carer facility, whether that's for an adult dependent or a teen dependent, whilst those were closed, they then were trying to juggle all of these multiple things within the one environment. And then lastly for us, some of the triggers that we know exist from our employee population are for people who we consider to be at risk anyway. And these might be people who, for personal safety and security reasons, so it could be a family and domestic violence situation. It could be somebody who's dealing with LGBTIQ issues or having it come out, et cetera. People who already have exposure or have been identified as mental ill health conditions, and those with immunosuppression, all of these things that we found really added to the pressure that was being exhibited when we asked people to start working from home or working at a different location. Indicators of not coping, I did get to hear Glenn's articulation. I thought he articulated it perfectly. I totally agree. I mean, really the key thing here when you're looking for something that's quite simple is, what do you recognise that is different in a person's actions, a person's behaviours, a person's language, and their demeanour in general? And I guess in order to be able to do that, one assumes that you have to already have a really great relationship with your leadership team to understand some of those existing challenges and what their current lifestyle is like, and therefore those types of items that might create additional stress for them. I guess separate to that, one of the things that I also heard Glenn talking about was, you know, what to do and what are some steps. I have actually sent through to Caro, and I know that she's going to forward it through after this session, a couple of key slides. So these are just hints and tips of things that we use here at IAG. We do use a particular framework. We love a good framework and, you know, a process to follow. So we talk about four steps. We talk about recognizing that there's a change in somebody. And then we talk about what you do from a response perspective. How do I respond to that person? How do I have the courage to have that conversation? And let me be clear, we don't expect people to solve it, nor do we expect people to be a psychologist. But our next step is refer. So how do you actually refer that person to the right type of assistance and support that they might need? And finally, our fourth step is reconnect. So it's a four-step process. But that's probably, I guess, the key information from me. And hopefully, Beth, I answered all elements of that question.
You did indeed. Thank you. And it's really interesting that in your worlds, we see it mirrored in school as well. I'm certainly noticing some changes in behaviour, and to have this discussion is really important. Now, in our schools, we've also got executive that leads teams. Like in high school, it's head teachers. It might be grade coordinators, it might be deputies. What are some suggestions you have that principals can create strong leaders in this field that develop emotional intelligence and have the capacity to help others? Because a principal can't do it all. We think we can sometimes, just quietly, but we can't. And to have leaders that can come on this journey with us is really important. Glenn, do you want to take that one first?
And then okay, yeah, sure. That's a tricky one, but a really important one, I think. And I go back to my time being in the counselling room. I think reflective practice is so, so important at building leaders and also trust in the people around the leader. And with the reflective practice comes vulnerability. I think it's important that part of leadership is being able to show vulnerability. And I can imagine, again, I don't know the ins and outs of the role of a principal, but I can imagine for a principal, you're at the head of a school, you need to be showing that you're, you know, a sign of strength and you've got it covered. I think there's something in that. And I'll probably want to draw your attention for a moment. I think about my time in professional sport, and one of the biggest learnings I had playing professional basketball was that even though there was some leaders leaders that I looked up to as players, as people, one thing that after a game, it might look like they've had a fantastic game. When we go to video review, it, no doubt we would see some of our leaders, some of our best players making mistakes. And I think what really was a good learning for me is that even though they're leaders, even though they're the leader of our team and who we're striving to be like and who drives us and who motivates us, we also get to see how they respond to mistakes and the learnings they can take from that and how they change that into the next game, into that week of training and so on. And I think that's a really good comparison because, you know, often at times leaders, it's hard to, we don't want to show weakness. But I think there's a lot of strength in being able to do that. And I'll touch briefly back now to the counselling type. And when I think about reflective practice, as I touched on, every month for me, I had clinical supervision. And for me, that was really, really important because being able to go in to my clinical supervisor, sometimes it was a group session, sometimes it was individual. But being able to play out, I'd record some of my counselling sessions, play the recording of that counselling session and let the group hear it and basically critique what I did. It's a really tough thing to do. It's a really tough thing for people to say, hey, you know, I'm not sure where you're going with that question, you know, those kind of things. But that's the best way to learn, to help me to understand what I'm doing, what personal biases I might be bringing into a session, those kind of things. And I think for when I think about teachers, principals, leadership groups, you know, I think there's certainly a role to play for things like reflective practice, where, you know, I talk about, I dealt with this scenario in this way, take it to a group, hey, this is what I did, critique me. I think that can really help develop leaders going forward. And it certainly, it helps us personally with the team environment, trust, many byproducts of that. So that's my thoughts.
Thank you. And our other experts?
look, I mean, I'd love to just build on some of those key concepts that Glenn shared as well. You know, trust is really the foundation for the relationships that we try to create with our people here at IAG. And as part of that, one of the things we talk about is a bank of trust. And I'm smiling just because it makes sense to me, but it might not make sense to everybody else. So really what we're saying is there are those behaviours that one does as an individual and as a team that you know are adding to the bank of trust. So it's like depositing money into the bank of trust. But there are also those things, and by things it might be an action, it might be a behaviour, it might be words you choose to use, it might be something that you choose to walk past that actually then starts to withdraw from the bank of trust. So, you know, that concept of trust is a strong foundation for what we believe in at IAG. As it relates to EQ, I guess the other thing that's important for us is just thinking about, I mean, you need to have self-awareness in order for you to really understand and manage, you know, emotions in a really positive way. And in thinking through some of the things that we do that might relate also to something that you can do from a school's environment, or maybe something that you guys already have a strength in, is that we normally tend to choose something that gives us a common language. So a common language might be through using like a particular profiling tool. So I mean, one example is the VIA Strength Finder. You know, there's a series of 24 different strengths. But what it does is it helps give everybody a baseline and an understanding of what the strengths are that each person is able to demonstrate and bring to a particular cohort, like a leadership group. I mean, there are other brain-based models, you know, like David Rock's SCARF model, things like that. But again, it's not about having to use these types of models, you know, to the degree that you have to understand it to such a level of articulation that it drives everything you do. But it's about how can you use this to hunch, you know, what actually gives people, you know, what motivates people, and therefore what is that language? What should I be listening out for, and what can I help people to understand, and how can people work together and be a little bit more collaborative? So that definitely from a common language perspective gives us also a baseline all to work from. If I talk about some sort of practical hints and tips, again, in the pack that Cara will send out to you guys after this particular meeting, there are a couple of rituals, I'm going to use that term, that we choose to use. So one of them, for example, is a mood board. So if we're going to talk about emotional intelligence, have we made space for people to actually share emotions? And what does it look like, and what does it feel like, and what does it sound like? So for example, for team meetings, what we might choose to, or a team huddle, which might be just a 15-minute meeting, we might get everybody just, first of all, just to plot where they're sitting from a mood perspective. And that's just to give us an understanding of how are they feeling today, and what do we need to be aware of as we progress in conversations for that particular meeting. An alternate view is we also use a wellbeing check-in. And so one of the items in the pack that will get sent out is the check-in is really supposed to be about your mindset. How are you checking in from a mindset perspective into this meeting? And it's about giving people a chance, again, to use, you know, to label how they're feeling. So, for example, I might have checked into this particular meeting feeling stressed or out of control or overwhelmed. I may have actually checked into this meeting feeling really excited and exhilarated. And then it's a chance for everybody to, again, baseline, get a view of if somebody has checked in and they're feeling overwhelmed, it's an opportunity for the rest of the leadership team to lean and say, is there any other support that we can provide you? Are you able to continue with the meeting and can you be present for the meeting? So those are just a couple of, you know, really quick things that one might choose to do as part of a ritual to help their team start talking about emotions and sharing them in a different sort of context.
Thank you. So we'll focus a little bit more selfishly now on the principle, and maybe you could continue on with answering this one. As a principal, I find that we have to be the duck on the water, calm on the outside, while furiously pedaling underneath the water, sometimes quite frantically, and that comes at a cost. How do we best look after ourselves while taking care of others? That's a big question, isn't it?
How about I take this one first and give poor Glenn a break?
Yes, please.
I love saying this to a group of educators. Do you know what? Set some goals. So what's really important is everybody has a diary, right? And it's about how important is it for you to really find the time to dedicate to your own well-being and your own thinking. So my personal opinion is that a couple of really quick things to do is actually put it in your diary to actually give yourself those breaks. One of the things I've actually started doing is 45-minute meetings instead of the hour, because I was finding, and this is probably similar to many of you, I was finding I was going back to back, forgetting to do, you know, just your normal things. Do you have time to go to the toilet? Do you have time to get a snack? Do you have time to, you know, refuel and get your energy back and to actually move mentally to be present in the next meeting? And often you don't, because you haven't given yourself that luxury to actually prepare adequately and also just to give yourself a bit of a mental break. But diarising, I think, is something that's really important. It's important that you do take care of yourself. So give yourself 15-minute breaks. Consider doing a mindfulness app. Consider just sitting there. Consider taking yourself out to breakfast one morning a week to give you a different view and a different opportunity prior to actually coming into your work environment. I think the other thing for me is you really do need to just start to decide what not to do. The beautiful thing about having a leadership team is providing these guys with opportunities as well to step into and to delegate to. So I think that development opportunity, and that's how it should be seen, is really powerful. So you're kind of achieving a couple of things at the same time. So one, it gives you an opportunity to rest, recover, and rejuvenate. Two, it gives somebody else a development opportunity. And then hopefully you have a bit more time back in your diary. I hope they're not too basic.
I actually think it's important to remind us of that. At Cabramatta High, we have 50-minute periods. So I would always book a meeting for 50 minutes. But who says it has to be 50 minutes? Why can't it be 40 minutes? And I bank 10 minutes to do something else. I think we fall in a habit from teaching through to leadership as we maintain, we fill that time. Because you wouldn't teach a class for 40 minutes and then say, oh, everybody take a 10-minute break. So that's actually really a good reminder. Glenn?
Yep. Yeah, I'll jump in there, Beth. For me, what Petrina mentioned there, I think the first thing that jumps to mind is boundaries. You know, I think it's so, so important to have boundaries. And when I think about the clients that I've seen over the years in stressful periods, boundaries are so useful, and to pick up on Petrina's point about the executive team, it's a team, and it's being able to delegate at times and know what you can and can't do at any given time. And that's one thing that I really like at TAL, where our executive and our leaders are really driving and encouraging good, healthy behaviours in and out of the office, taking breaks, going on holidays, and sharing with us what they're doing, if they need to leave early to pick up the kids or whatever it might be. That's well communicated and those boundaries are set for everyone. And I think that that sends a really powerful message that that's what they're doing to help maintain their own well-being. The other thing is the simple stuff. And I'd say you have to place a priority on your own personal well-being. And I'll touch briefly on a paper that was produced by the New Economic Foundation out of the UK called The Five Ways to Wellbeing. And basically looked at the research across the world about what works, what makes a difference to improve individuals' well-being. And they're pretty simple. They're really basic things that you can do, and they're fundamental. So those five tips, you know, staying active where you can, doesn't talk about exercise. It says just staying active and trying to find ways you can keep activity in your day-to-day life. Connecting socially. Obviously, we've heard so much about social isolation and social connection, disconnection, that kind of thing. But we need to be more socially connected now than ever. Giving back to others, saying please, thank you, being proactive in what you can do. It does make us feel good when we are giving back. Releases oxytocin in our brain. The more acts of kindness we have, that makes us feel good. Continue learning. No doubt for educators, you'd be strong advocates for continuing to learn. And the last tip is taking notice or being mindful. And Petrina touched on the Smiling Mind app. I think that's a fantastic app, an Australian-based app. You guys might have been fully aware of this from the work they do in schools already. But I certainly do that with my kids. And I find it, that 5 to 7 to 10 minute break, just to stop and hit the pause button, just so, so useful, not only for my kids, but for me. Now, they're fundamental. They're pretty, when you hear those five tips, you think, wow, they're pretty basic. But I look at those, and again, to reference back to my basketball days, when I'm playing basketball every day, we work on footwork, we work on shooting technique, defense, all the fundamentals of basketball. We were working on them every single day. And the reason we did that was because come fourth quarter, when the pressure's on, the game is really tight, you're distracted, you're tired, you're fatigued, all these things are happening. You need to be able to rely on the fundamentals to get you through those tough periods. And I think it's the same thing, in tough periods and stressful periods, global pandemic, we need to be able to rely on some of the basics that we know make a difference for us. So, those five tips, hopefully you can, and I'll send it again, I've sent Allegra the paper that she can distribute just to give you a reminder of those five tips. And maybe there's something you can think about doing too. I asked you a question at the beginning on a scale of 1 to 10, how you're traveling. Maybe you can think about some of those tips and what you could work on just to give yourself a bit of a boost. But certainly placing a priority on your own well-being. It's not about making time. It's not about finding the time, it's making the time.
Thanks, Glenn. So they're my three questions to start us off. And I now know we want to open it up to the floor. I don't have the powers given to me to bring people in and bring people out, but Caro or Allegra do, because they've got the key. So maybe we could open up to the floor now.
Yes, we can. We do have a question from Murray that's in the chat. Murray, about the EAPs and referring to counsellor. I'll just share that question. And then otherwise people put up your virtual hand or go off mute. But the question was, outside of EAPs and our personal understanding, referring to a counsellor, what else can we do as leaders to support our staff?
Sorry, you're on mute, Allegra.
Wow, the whole way. So I was just saying, outside of EAPs and our personal understanding or referring to a counsellor, what else can we do as leaders to support our staff? That's a question from Murray.
Look, I'll jump in, Petrina, you might have some thoughts as well. But for me, it's having the conversations. I don't think we need to rely fully on counselling to get someone through. When I think about when I was supporting people, I was working for organisations that provided EAP services. Joe Bloggs might come in and see me for counselling. I see him for 1 hour. I might see him 2 weeks later. So I see him for 1 hour in a 2 week period. There's so many more interactions that can be so powerful, if not more powerful, than one counselling session at that point in time. So I think that's where it's really useful to be supporting people and to have a team of people around them, a support network around somebody is so, so important. And then, doing the little things, trying to take time out, have breaks, you know, get some activity. Those things do make a difference. We know they do. There's evidence behind them. So trying to encourage people into some lifestyle changes, that can certainly make a difference. But being there as a sounding board, you know, you don't have to have the right words all the time to say. Sometimes it can be just about listening. And listening goes such a long way to having someone feel understood. And, you know, Stephen Covey's fifth habit of highly effective people is seek first, understand, then be understood. You know, and as people, we like to be understood. And if a person's struggling, the more we can do to understand where they're at, you know, I think that's going a long way to helping them on their way to a better space.
Murray, does that cover what you wanted to cover off? Did you have any other follow-up questions on that?
Yeah, look, I wasn't so much for my own benefit, but to start the conversation, because I know that we've got these tools that that we're given as professionals. You know, don't forget to mention EAPE, and we know that there's only a certain number of people that will that use that service. And Glenn, as you say, it's only, you know, I think it's up to six, and they're quite a long way apart. But just to use a specific example, I know that all of our staff, I think most principals would say the same, are quite close to each other. COVID's probably brought them closer. And I just think to my teachers that don't have necessarily much family outside of the group that we have created in our school. Many people go home to, you know, children and partners and whatnot, but there's also plenty of people that don't. And there's a number of staff at our school that are going through their own trials and tribulations, and you know, you can't solve everybody's problems, and being that sounding board's important. But I guess just to recognise that we've got quite a unique environment in schools, because people are fairly, I think generally, have a generally high emotional intelligence and a genuine compassion for children, mostly, not all. we're managing those that don't. But just outside of those sort of, you know, well, there's EAPE there to support you. We obviously are the sounding board. You can't be all things to all people. I think that you've already mentioned a number of tools along the way. I typed that question up right at the start. But just to recognise that schools are quite unique places. COVID's brought our staff a lot closer together. They really appreciate each other more now. And funnily enough, and Beth, I'm not too sure if you'd agree, but the kids couldn't wait to get back to school. Like, kids I wasn't expecting, you know, couldn't wait to get back to school. So, you know, I think we're riding a bit of an unusual time, or an unusual wave, if you like, of change that's washing across schools as a whole. And the temptation is to, you know, jump in and make wholesale changes. And that's certainly what we're working on, establishing the new normal now. But just keeping in mind people's wellbeing, especially their mental health, what they're dealing with at home, is important for all of us. And I appreciate the opportunity to have the conversation. So I don't know if that's more a question than a comment.
Thank you. No, that's they're great observations, I think, Murray, and it's lovely to hear, I think, the positives coming out, as well as, I think, the challenges. We've got another question from Cabramatta High School about how can we be proactive to support staff wellbeing rather than reactive?
Katrina, do you want to jump on that one?
Yeah, actually, thank you. I was just going to say, look, one of the things that I've included also just in the resources pack is it's a really basic evaluation for the team to be able to work through. And it's about how well people understand mental health in the workplace. And the reason I included it is because I thought, again, as I've talked about before, in being able to establish trust and also being able to have a common language, you know, you don't have to solve this. This is the really important thing, right, we do as leaders. If we're presented with an issue and we go, oh, geez, I better solve this. But in all honesty, you know, you actually have an entire LT, and that's the role of the LT. And imagine how empowering and powerful it would be if everybody together worked on mental health in the workplace is really important. What does it mean to us? What do we understand by it? And when you, for example, if you choose to use this particular evaluation, then you actually know what you're dealing with, because then you can start making some informed decisions. So I think that's one way. And to, as I was saying, see it as part of a journey. That's another favourite corporate word. See it as a journey that the entire LT can take together. And again, it's something you don't have to solve by yourself. And you'll probably find you've got some people, a bit like Glenn and I, who have a real passion for health and well-being, and who will probably want to actually take the lead with something like that. So that's probably my hint.
I might just add just a few further thoughts on how we've done that at TAL. You know, we've established a health and wellbeing committee, and we have streams, physical health, mental health, and financial health, and then look at health as a whole across those three streams. And what's really important is that we've really tried to go out to the business and understand the needs of the business. So we have people part of the stream, they go out and speak to their own business units and find what the people want to talk about, what they want information on. And it's been really useful to know that, you know, our staff, for example, want to know more about sleep and how they can, you know, what they can do to improve their sleep. Relationships is a big one. We know from our EAP usage, which, as Murray mentioned, is not high normally. We've able to double that. It was about just under 5%. We've just got that to 10% in the last 12 months. But most people use our EAP for personal relationships. So if we can be doing and promoting strategies and how people can improve their personal relationships, that's going to pay a dividend to their own mental health in the long run.
Thank you for that. Are there other questions from the floor, not from the chat, or anyone who wanted to speak up personally from the floor? No? Well, then I'll go to another one of the chat ones, which is, you know, when staff are experiencing poor mental health, it often has an impact on colleagues through negative behaviour, you know, aggressive social isolation, refusing tasks and absence. How do you support the staff that are dealing with the team members who are experiencing mental health issues? Petrina, maybe you could jump in there.
Yeah, sure, happy to. I think, you know, there's no silver bullet for these sorts of situations. And again, it does go back to better understanding and knowing, you know, the motivations of your cohort. If, for example, we've got somebody and nobody else on the team, for example, knows that they're suffering from mental ill health, then this is probably a reason why people are seeing somebody act out and potentially being managed in a slightly different way to everybody else. And so I could understand that that might cause particular issues. But if I go back again to, and you can tell I'm big on sort of baselining, if you can go back and better understand each person and their individual requirements and then start sharing as a team what's important to everybody, it might be a way to actually start helping others recognise that everybody has a very individual and different situation. But I might go to Glenn. He might have some wise words of wisdom. He's our psychologist.
Look, for me, it comes back to, you know, I asked you earlier about the scale of 1 to 10 where you're all at, and get you to think about that. And I don't think, you know, all the attention needs to be on the people that are, you know, 2, 3, 4. I think the attention needs to be on everybody. I think complacency, from what I've seen in my experiences in the counselling room, complacency is what gets people in a bit of hurt when they become complacent about, oh, look, it'll be fine. It'll sort itself out. It'll be fine. Sometimes it doesn't. And it comes back to bite us. So, you know, even if we're sitting at that 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10, we still need to be making sure we're doing something for our own mental health, but checking in on people, even if we think they're doing okay. And I think that's where what I touched on earlier about that reflective practice. And Petrina mentioned some of those tools to have at the start of meetings. I think they're really powerful. I think that you make that kind of narrative in meetings or checking in, that just becomes standard practice. And when that happens, you know, again, trust is built. It becomes a regular thing. All right, we're going to start the meeting. I'm going to talk about how I'm turning up today. I think that's a good way to check in on people. But then you get to hear more about what's actually happening for the person that's supporting a colleague. And then you can, and again, it's offering those same support services that, that are in place.
Thank you very much for that. That is, that's really, really valuable. I wanted just then to move to probably just a couple of, just more of a wrap up. So for Glenn and Petrina, just any sort of, you know, final comments or that you wanted to share before I then wrap up with the group and then, and head us on our merry ways in this afternoon. So what's the kind of two or three kind of absolute you must do's, or, you know, your sort of top two or three recommendations out of this, out of your discussion today that you would love everyone to take away?
Mine are quite simple. I'm not sure if this is two or if this is six, but it's the first one is the boundaries. I mentioned boundaries. I think it's so important for principals to maintain boundaries. I mean, I just think about one principal I know, and certainly the principal at my children's school. They're at the events, they're at the sporting events, they're at the music events, they're there at, you know, they're there, everything. You see them all the time. And I think, wow, when do you turn off? And I'm sure that's probably very similar for many of you. So I think boundaries are so important. And I'm not sure if it's one or six, but those five, or five, but the five ways to wellbeing. Now, I think they're so simple, they're fundamental. We know they make a difference to our wellbeing. Evidence tells us that. Try and find ways that you can incorporate those into your day-to-day.
Thanks, Glenn. And Petrina?
I don't think mine are any different to Glenn, but I think it's really important to diarise time for yourself. And that's important for self-reflection as well as the ability to recharge and reflect. And then the other thing is more from a leadership perspective. It's more around culture. The reason, and I know I didn't get to talk earlier because I had tech issues, but my interest in all things culture is what drives my passion for safety and wellbeing. So I think you have to really start being really clear in regards to what is it specifically from a cultural perspective you're doing to set your leadership team, but also all of your faculty up for success. Are you all really clear on what your vision is from a faculty perspective, and what does that actually mean, and how are you actually striving to get it? I mean, in the corporate world, we have a people plan or a people and culture plan, of which, you know, we have specific things that, that fit into there, but we're really clear on what it is we're trying to do to ensure that we've got success from a people perspective. So I'm just hopeful that that's something else that, that you guys likely already have and can also build in and integrate a wellness component into that, because it's as important, our foundation, as anything else you might have in there.
Great. Thank you very much, both of you, for your contribution, and Beth as well. Did you have any final comments you wanted to say, of things that you, your sort of gem that you want to take forward, Beth?
I think it's really important to focus on wellbeing. And just a shout out to the team at Cabramatta who are doing a wellness twilight next week, where staff can choose to do woodworking and make cutting boards. They can do cooking, they can do knitting, they could do dance and yoga as part of their 3 hours additional training required. And building wellbeing into it is an innovation of the leadership team at the school. I wish I could say I could take credit for it, but I can't. And I think people are signing up in droves for that, just that chance to do something different, that chance to be creative or whatever it takes to just focus on something else for 3 hours. It's fully subscribed to. So I think that's a really good takeout. Yeah. For maybe others could, if they may have a similar thing, could share it.
Yeah, so, I'd love that in the final couple of moments. There are a couple of people around the room who can share something they're proud of that they're doing for wellbeing for their teams. I'm sure you are. Someone willing to go off mute?
We're all about food. We're all about food. Food and wellbeing go hand in hand at our place. Yeah.
Love what it, are you Zena. Doing on food then, Zena?
Sorry?
What are you doing on food in particular?
Well, we often, you know, feed faculties And the girls, you know, we're an all-girls school. The girls do a lot with food anyway. And yeah, that's our hospitality. Students are great in terms of catering, and they've done some really beautiful thank you things for the staff. We kept morning tea going even during COVID with the staff that were on site. We just had pre-packaged things delivered so that people felt that there was still that sense of community and well-being being promoted. And we've all stacked on the kilos. So yeah, probably it is time to do some. Oh, and we had exercise class in the quadrangle. We did lots of 80s style aerobics, and that was a lot of fun during COVID. And we actually got a spike, because I'm going to borrow that word, a spike in students coming to school when they saw the footage of us, like, and photos of us on Facebook exercising. They wanted to see us all in our leisure gear. So.
Great. Who else in the room wants to share? Any other ones? Something less fun, but we did the Strengths Finder last year. It was actually really good. So we did sort of $30 a book for the whole team, and that was really valuable because we did develop one language for talking about our strengths, and that helped, I think, in terms of conflict. It's not so much about well-being, but it does certainly help in terms of our teamwork, working together and recognizing that we do have different strengths and how do we actually play to those strengths, and also how those strengths come up and sort of hit against each other sometimes. That can be a real, real challenge. Great. Well, I will leave it there then. It's 28 past. Thank you everybody for all your time this afternoon. And thank you in particular to Glenn, Petrina, and to Beth for all your wise words. I will share immediately the survey, Petrina's 5 slides, and then also Petrina's 5 slides and Glenn's 5 points. So you've got that research as well. So please give us feedback. We'd love to make this as useful as we can in the future, and really want to make sure that we're just continuing to support you. And thank you so much, everybody, for everything that you're doing for the students and each other at this time. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Allegra.
Thanks. Thank you.